even for local suppliers. For me, I'm so strict with my suppliers list, like unbelievably strict.
She's an exclusive wedding planner doing some incredible work over in Ibiza.
Your couples, what's the process of helping them with their suppliers?
The legal stuff that's happened since Brexit, so it does make it a little bit more difficult now. You've got to go and do a shoot, and there's always people around you who will want to do a shoot. There's always an upcoming photographer. There'll always be a stationer. Hi, this is my new brochure for 2025. I'm great, good for you. I'll see you later.
Hey, be sure you stick around because we're only getting warmed up.
So I had to distract the mother, try and get her in a really deep conversation, and I was like timing the 20 minutes because they told me they'd only take 20 minutes while they were like, I was like, are they done yet? Are they done?
20 minutes, that's quite a long time. Impressive. Very impressive.
Quite a long time, yeah.
Go on, cheers.
Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you're viewing or listening. Welcome to another episode of the Think Wedding Business podcast. Now, today's a good one because who doesn't love a nice abroad wedding, Adam?
Oh, I certainly like them.
Everybody loves an abroad wedding. And we're so pleased today to have Lauren from...
Hidden Treasures.
Hidden Treasures Ibiza, yeah.
Hidden Treasures Ibiza.
She is an exclusive wedding planner doing some incredible work over in Ibiza. And she lives there as well. So she's on our Zoom call today. And it's a great pleasure to introduce Lauren.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. It's lovely to see you both.
Thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on.
Is it? Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
You're an hour ahead, aren't you?
It's like I'm just an hour, yeah. An hour ahead.
How's the weather over there? That's what...
I mean, to you guys, it's going to be pretty warm. And this
is cold for us. It's
cold.
It's freezing.
Yeah. I've got two heaters on around me now in the office. It's about 14 degrees. It gets down to about 6 or 7 at night.
I feel really sorry for you. 14 degrees.
Sorry, yeah, I do have to put a little jacket on, you know, but I mean, it does get colder, but we've had a pretty mild winter so far, so I cannot complain.
What's wedding season in Ibiza? When does that start? Is that an all year round or?
No, it starts April more or less, like the end of April. We are trying to push it earlier because it's lovely in the whole of April, and it's going to gradually get earlier, I guess, because Easter's getting earlier and that's when the direct flight starts. So we could say normally the first week of May, but they kind of trickle in end of March, April, and then finish in October.
Yeah, nice. Cool stuff. Well, we've got loads of questions today. People are going to be anxious to know about, you know, Ibiza weddings and what the whole process is. But I think we should start with your background. How the hell are you out in Ibiza doing awesome weddings? Give me some background.
And it's quite a story. I'll try and cut it down for you because I'll babble. So my background is performance entertainment, trained as performer, singer, all of that stuff. And then I was 20, 21, 22, little party girl.
Going back 5 or 6 years then?
Just a couple of years ago, yeah, just a couple. A magician, an illusionist came into my dance college and was looking for a magician's assistant, he wanted it to be dance-based and have someone with a little bit of strength to do some of the illusions, balancing things. And I auditioned and got the job, and it was a six-month season in Ibiza. So I was whisked off to Ibiza, jumping in out of boxes and balancing on swords and doing a bit of a dance in between and a costume change around the hotels. It was loads of fun, but yeah, I wasn't taking life seriously. I was going to Ibiza for 6 months. I was out all the time having a great time. Did that for a couple of years and then was like, I'm just never moving back to England. So I then, yeah, who knows why? I was in a band then, in a different group, doing vintage numbers with a guy and a girl, and then I did a bit of solo work, and then I'd been doing gigging and I've been doing the whole girl band holiday park circuit when I was 16 17 18, you know, all of that Bewitched and all them girls were out then, and I used to go on the holiday park, so I'd been gigging anyway. That was what I did, so then I just continued to do that in different ways in Ibiza, and then it evolved, I guess.
So did you then get into weddings as a sort of singer or?
Yes. So became then a wedding singer, if you like, ceremony, aperitif kind of vibes, and had bands and then sang with the DJs and, you know, did that kind of vibe, and also had a production company where say company, but I was putting other things together. So if a client would want a female vocalist, but a three piece behind or whatever, I would just put them together and produce and make, and create what they wanted. And kind of loosely had a bit of an agency doing that kind of thing. And then I'm someone who's just addicted to work and businesses and making new projects. So then I had a photo booth company. And then I was doing decoration for bits of weddings. And I just saw a lot. I saw it all from being a vendor and being in and out the venues. So I saw what not to do and what to do, and just kind of evolved into saying, you know what, I want to take the scope. I don't just want to be the singer anymore. I'd kind of had enough of lugging gear around and all of that stuff.
So you've done what we all do at a wedding and go, you know what, if I was running this, I'd have done it. I'd have probably done it a bit differently.
Well, you always, when you're in the industry for a long time, you do know what works. You know what great suppliers are, and you know how to actually marry that event together. And you get all this knowledge and you build. When you first start, you're going out and you're doing your thing, and that's what you're concentrating on. But you notice over the years of what makes a really good wedding. Just out of interest, are you still doing any singing or entertaining, or are you literally solely just the planning now?
Just the planning now. So I haven't performed for a long time, but it's because it's in me, it's still always going to be who I am. I'm probably known for making sure that the music and the soundtrack to the wedding day is slick. Like, no, there's, I guess I come from a different point of view. So I'll say to the couple, there can be no awkward silences. When that's happening, what's being played? Where's the music? Where's the sound system? Where's this? Whereas a lot of the planners would be like, oh, I didn't think about that. And it's a last minute thing. Whereas for me, it's the first thing.
Yeah. And you've done a lot of jobs then within weddings and events. So you're drawing on all that experience from the entertainment, which I guess is certainly for an Ibiza wedding. Couples that come to Ibiza will want that party entertainment.
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of that want like a party wedding?
Yeah, so a lot of couples will want the Ibiza-style party. So they'll want the sax and all of that stuff, or they'll want the electric violin or the house vocalist, or, they'll want that feel. They want good lighting. And a lot of them met on the dance floor at Space, or, a lot of them will have that relationship with Ibiza, and that's why they want to get married here. And it's because they've met here, or they're on a girl's holiday, or you know they've been coming here for years and now they're coming with their kids over here, and so that they've always got that relationship, and they generally want to be taken back to a night where they heard Carl Cox and they fell in love, or they were out that night and they, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of meaning, history and why they want to come back.
Would you even remember your partner if you met them at a dance floor in Space at 4 a.m? Who are you? I don't know. Should we get married? Yeah.
So it happens a lot, though, doesn't it?
And it does.
I mean, I love music. So I love it when the couple are quite music centric. And
yeah,
I think it's quite romantic as well. If you've met somewhere, and I think it's romantic to want to go back to that place to get married. So I suppose the question is then, are most or all of your couples coming from different parts of the world to get married in Ibiza, i.e. the UK, coming in to get married there? Or are you doing local weddings as well?
So the Ibizenk and the local people, they don't use planners or anything that we do. They're still quite old-fashioned in their wedding styling. They'll have, their cousin will be a photographer, their sister will be florist, they just do it all themselves, because Ibby Thinking's a very inbred, but it's not the right word to use. They just all know each other, they're all big families, and they're just my sister will do that, my friend will do that, and they just, yeah, and then obviously the weddings just run over and over and over, and they're dinner at midnight.
Too late, yeah. You said inbred. But I get what you mean. It's a small island, and people will pull the cousins, the families, and they'll make a real family traditional style wedding, I imagine, which I suppose that's really nice. So that you've answered the question. All your weddings are from people.
So most of your clients are they based in the UK, or do you get people from all over the world?
I'd say 70-80% are UK, and then we have Australian, Canadian, American, and we have some kind of Swiss, Dutch, that kind of market as well. But I'd say most of the weddings here are UK-based couples, yeah.
Before we get on to that, I just want to pull it back to when you first started planning. Like, how did you get transition from that being a vendor to like starting to plan? Did you and set up your business?
So I kind of saw what was going on, good and bad, and wanted to do it basically. And I started doing some decoration for some weddings. Now in those days, it was the really shabby chic weddings. You remember, like, the wooden hearts,
yeah,
and the Hessian and the jars, and it was all of that stuff. And I started making it all because that's what people wanted at the time. So I started making ranges, so like a white and gold and a pink and blue, and I started hand making everything, upcycling stuff, and really like painting, like hand painting the vases, and really, which I still love doing now, but that was the look then. So I started doing that for some weddings, some small, very small weddings, and then I just took over doing the planning as well, and just kind of evolved that way. And when I did start doing the planning as a whole, I still did the decoration. We still do it now. I thought that as a wedding planner, you provided the decoration and that's what you did, and it was all yours. I had no idea that planners were just sitting behind a laptop and outsourcing the decoration. And here's me up till 5 a.m. painting bloody vases. I just had no clue. So I just did it. But then I became known for including all the decoration in the wedding package. And I hate the word package, but including the decoration in the service and really tailoring it to them. So just as an example, I had a couple who were really rocky and they like thrash metal, and they were, you know, blonde black hair and piercings and stuff, and they were really lovely. That was their vibe, and they wanted purple, black, and like hard like metals around. That was their vibe, and I made the entire range for them.
Wow.
For them to match their style, and that's where it came from. So whatever they wanted, whatever the couple would want, I would make that range for them, and that was what I did in those days, and that's kind of how I founded. It's evolved now. It is the decoration that we do is created for them, but it now comes from a Pinterest board and lots of purchasing. And I'm not spraying jars of jam jars and.
Yeah, but you're not afraid to get your hands dirty and get your sleeves rolled up, and that's what it takes, doesn't it? As you're building your business.
That's a good USP then, that fit, like, because from a couple point of view, that just makes that whole thing easier because you're planning the entire wedding and you can work with them on their styling and their decorations, which is a big, you know, it's a big. So to have that all in house and handled by you rather than having to then source them, it like makes sense totally.
Yeah, and we still do it for them so that you don't come to us and find a package A, B or C, like, do you want pink, blue and or green? It's still not like that. It's still, we work with their mood board, we create the decoration for them. If they've got a colour that we don't have, we'll get those napkins in that colour. It's still very much created for them. If we do 50 white weddings a year, they all look different. You know, it's still very much a personalized service, which no one else is doing. And I do feel like no one else could style a bride or groom's wedding better than the person who's been on the phone with them every 3 days for 2 years.
Yeah,
because I know that put that there, she's not going to like that there.
You know instinctively what they're going to want and like, and like you say.
But it's that next level service, isn't it? You know, you're walking through the process with them, holding the hand all the way through and creating that real bespoke wedding for them, which is so much better. You know, I speak to a lot of people who are getting married abroad and they've just gone with the hotel and they've got their package and they turn up and that's it. Everything's included, the photographer and nothing personal, you know. Although they've got the nice setting, but the whole wedding is a bit impersonal. But
I'm wondering, so you obviously identified that your local weddings are quite traditional and you were targeting UK couples. How did you market to that and get those clients?
So in them days, it was just Facebook. And I'm still a massive advocate for social media. Is for me, it's like essentially, you know, number one. And that's just what I did. I just commented, followed, shared, just absolutely smashed the Facebook. And before I even had a website, and just started getting clients, and then obviously, you know, word of mouth, being able to put myself to the venues and say, this is me, this is what I do, I'm the only one doing decoration as well, which is great for a venue because it means less suppliers coming in and out with vans and stuff. And yeah, just smashed the Facebook. Obviously now that's become 5-6 other social media platforms, yeah. But at the time it was just advertise. And
yeah, I was going to ask that. Obviously, Adam's asked the question, you know, what did you do at the start? What was your marketing based around? And I suppose if you're living in Ibiza, it has to be social media, really, doesn't it? To get those initial inquiries. And then word of mouth kicks in and it builds from there.
Yeah.
In your experience then, is there any platforms, social media platforms that work better for you regards to getting bookings? Would you say Insta's better now? Or is it across the board? Are you using TikTok? Where do your bookings come from? Where most of your bookings come from, social media wise?
So social media is definitely still Instagram.
Yeah.
For us. I'd say like 80% of our bookings come through an inquiry or something that they've seen on Instagram. I mean, I've obviously got, you know, a great website and we're on all different platforms now, Pinterest, TikTok, everything. And I do have, you know, when you have your consultation form that comes in with your drop-down menu, where do you hear of us? It's becoming more, you know, Pinterest, TikTok, all that kind of stuff, but it's still primarily Instagram. You know, and Instagram is the one that I run myself as well. I'm very attached to my Instagram. So
yeah,
maybe that's why, because I'm on it all the time.
Yeah, but you always need that good backbone of a good website, don't you? Because they'll find you in these places, but then they'll come to your website and fill out your contact form. And then
yeah.
And having your website on point and really clear is a good backbone to the business as well. All right, great. Everybody's, it's mad at Instagram. This last couple of years, it's just,
Instagram.
I mean, I never used to get any bookings or any DMs on Instagram. And the last 2 or 3 years, it's taken over everything. It's taken over my website. Yeah. Facebook, I still get the off one on Facebook, but I still like to direct them back to the website to go and fill out the contact form so I can get them details from them.
Exactly.
And then they're in that ecosystem of my emails, so I'm not checking 25 social media platforms all at the same time.
Sorry, Lauren, just want to tell you your website is really good as well. Like, I've researched it for this. It's very visual.
Thank you.
Appreciated. There's lots of videos and photos on there. So it, like, you really can see the dream, like, it's full page images and stuff. And I noticed Holly from Geordie Shore's wedding, like, right front and center. was that because I'm guessing that was magazine features and that celebrity element? Did you get many of those, or did that bring in like a whole new level of exposure? Or
I mean, it definitely, people definitely mentioned it and kind of, I guess, thought, well, if you're good enough to do something that's being filmed for MTV, because the whole wedding was on MTV, if you're being filmed for that and if you're good enough, if you're that level, then God, you can do my wedding, you know, God, of course you can. So it did get an element of that, and then I got new followers, and obviously followers eventually turn into bookings, doesn't it, you know? So yeah, I mean, it was quite the ride. She's the sweetest girl. She's not the girl that you think, the Geordie Shore girl.
Kind of Geordie Shore episode that you'd expect then.
Yeah, not at all. So everyone's like, oh my God, that wedding's going to be insane. Like, you're going to have to get security. You're going to be mopping up vomit. It's going to be crazy. It just wasn't. I mean, that all of that they were doing on the TV, which, let's be honest, we were all doing at that age, was 10 years ago. So yeah. they're all settled in relationships and okay, they had a good party, but
it's all very clever, isn't it? And I found when I've done that, like reality stars, I've done celebrity weddings, and the weddings are the same. They're just people that are in their intimate setting with their friends and family. They're just having it, like, they're just people, aren't they? Like, you, I remember you advising me on this, that celebrity endorsement from a business point of view can really help.
Yeah, it just gives you couples confidence knowing that you're working this sort of high end. Sort of circles. I mean, a mentor told me this many years ago, you know, if you ever event and there's a celebrity there, you've got to get a selfie. You've got to either get involved or get a picture with them, because it just speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It definitely, it shows that they trust you, you know, and obviously they're picky, aren't they? Because they don't want the private business everywhere. So they're picky. And the funny thing is, in Ibiza, we kind of live in a bubble. So I don't watch UK TV anymore.
Me neither.
I don't really know who a lot of people are, and a lot of us here don't watch UK TV or you know, whatever TV, and don't really have magazines and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of us don't know who people are. So I've had many celebrities at weddings and just not even known, or the photographer's not known, or whoever's just, we just don't know. And it's kind of nice because it is an island that's full of celebrities and they do just walk around freely and no one really harasses them. And they can just be sitting in a restaurant. Yeah. Lots of them have got second homes here. And the fact that we're not bothered by it, or that we don't know who they are, it's kind, they kind of like it, you know?
So you've been at Ibiza for all these years. Do you do anything in the UK, or is it all Ibiza?
No, it's all Ibiza. We are expanding to Mallorca at the moment. We're in the process of doing that. I'm doing a wedding fair in Mallorca on the weekend of the 9th of March. Lovely. To start building. Yeah, just to like start building relationships with venues and vendors, and you know, if clients come along, then great. So that's going to be a whole new thing for me, being it, because then you become a destination planner, which is, that is like a whole other thing, you know. Like here with my clients, I can, you're not just getting your wedding planned, you're getting 20 years of experience of, oh, you know where the best paella is, go to that little shack on the beach down there that no one knows about, and you'll have that. Or what do you need that, okay, just give me a sec, I'll call someone, you know. It's that like small island of us knowing everyone and being able to just do anything in a second. Whereas when you're doing a destination wedding planning, as I imagine, you don't have that. So yeah, you know, it's going to be a whole different thing for me and the girls, you know, being over there. But we've got to expand, so it's going to happen. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know about you, Adam, but next time I'm in Ibiza, I'm definitely going to give Lauren a call to find out the best paella place. Yeah.
I think like paella.
So, okay then, how many weddings do you do a year?
So we do between 30 and 50 a year.
Yeah.
Which I'm aware is a lot for one company, but, you know, I'm just a bit of a, is the right word for it, overachiever. I don't know. I mean, I just love work, so I just keep taking them, and yeah, I mean, the right clients come in and that's it. I guess if you were in the UK, it would be more all year, right? Because you still do winter weddings in the UK, whereas ours are squeezed in to
I still get a lot spring and summertime, but we still get them winter weddings as well. What would you say would be your average budget for a really good Ibiza wedding? Or what is your average budget, would you recommend, if you can answer that?
So, I mean, it all depends on the amount of guests, obviously, because per guest, you've then got another chair, another place set, another menu, another drink, and it gets bigger and bigger. And a lot of the venues here have minimum spends as well. So a budget wedding isn't really a thing here anymore. It was when I started. I could really give a good budget wedding. But yeah, you just can't anymore. So I guess maybe about 80K would be like a nice amount for 50, 60 guests, but you wouldn't be having a 5-piece band or the best catering or the most luxurious venue with that. That would be a nice wedding, but it wouldn't be your all singing, all dancing kind of day, you know. And obviously they go up to whatever.
Quite an affluent sort of wedding industry then compared to the UK.
I actually don't, in comparison, I mean, I haven't planned in the UK. I'm not sure. I know that you can still do a budget wedding in the UK. It's still possible to source things. But then I guess here, nothing's from Ibiza. Everything's brought in. So like flowers don't grow in Ibiza. They all come from the Netherlands or Barcelona. So because the soil's not right here. So the flowers don't grow here. So that's already double the price of anywhere else, yeah, you know, because they've got to get them here. Produce, food, it's all brought in. So everything's already more expensive. Cost of living is higher. So you're already paying extra for your suppliers. So it is, I believe, a lot higher than the UK. But then if you want that magical day with those memories of where you met on the dance floor and that guaranteed golden hour for your pictures, and it's always going to be an outdoor wedding as well. If you want all of that guaranteed, it's like, it's priceless.
I'm just thinking from a supplier point of view, if an inquiry comes in to me and it's for Ibiza, I'm thinking, well, it's probably going to be a decent budget wedding. That's
yeah yeah we're getting less of the definitely less of the people coming in who they just know now that they just can't. It's really not us being like, oh, I need a minimum spend and I'm not going to touch that wedding unless it's this. It's not about that. It's just I'd give you a budget wedding if I could, but I can't anymore. Yeah.
It's what it costs you.
What do you find that people, like couples, prioritize? What do the days look like? What's typically important? Do you have a certain style of wedding that tends to, like, is the trends and kind of what are people spending the money in which areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think catering is a good one. It's got to be a good one always. For me, the most important thing after, of course, you have your venue, and then if that comes with catering or the villa, you bring in the catering. Once that basic kind of structure is formed, for me, the most thing I always tell my clients that they have to spend on is the photographer. That's like, don't scrimp on your photographer. Don't take someone that's just starting out. Don't you know, take that one because they're a few hundred quid cheaper. Get the best photographer, the one that you are absolutely obsessed with, the one that you love, because that's all you've got at the end of the day.
Same for your video, right? Of course, don't forget.
Is it same for the singer and entertainment? Because the entertainment makes the images. They put the atmosphere to make the images.
No, she's right. Photo and video is important. Forget your singers.
Well,
I mean, obviously it's all important because you've got to have something to record or to take pictures of. Yeah. But, you know, a good videographer, stroke photographer will be able to make anything look like it's an amazing day and a great party just by, you know, detail shots and a few smiles.
Yeah.
Rather than if you have a cracking wedding and you've got no photos and no videos.
Yeah.
Or they're really shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't want to elaborate on that. What I am going to say is every wedding that I've done abroad, and I've been all over the place, I've been to Ibiza, Tuscany, Portugal, Cyprus, and I've been to lots of different places, and every single wedding that I've ever done, they've always brought their own suppliers to those areas. So I suppose that's this next question, how it leads into the next question really is, do you work with suppliers from different parts of the world? I know it's a bit different in Ibiza, but what would you say to people who want to get abroad bookings? Give me some marketing tips, you think, or where would they start to think, right, I want to get a wedding in Portugal. There's a planner over there. What would the process be for somebody to start getting destination weddings?
I mean, I guess I'm actually going to plug another business now. So I'm actually going into coaching vendors and venues. I'm about to launch that side as well. So one of the main thing I would say is you have to put yourself in front of people. So for me, expanding to Mallorca, I've been there 5 times in the last couple of months, put myself in front of the venues, stayed at the hotel, gone there for a coffee, took the event manager for a coffee, found my feet there, gone to meet a florist. You know, you have to put yourself in front of people. Now, it's not always doable. I can go to Mallorca in half an hour on the plane. It's not always doable when you're going from the UK. But I do believe that you have to almost harass planners and venues, because we get so much shit coming in every day. Oh, hi, and they've just changed the name and it's totally in person. I'm just like, delete, whatever. You're just sending out a blanket email. But to really stand out, putting yourself in front of them. Hi, I'm coming over. Can we have a video call? Can you have a look at my stuff? Like just almost like harassing. And I'm a big believer in getting out there and doing a shoot. Like for me, I love a shoot. I've been like the queen of styled shoots now for the last few years. So you've got to get out there and do a shoot and make the contacts, because everyone wants to work at that destination. It's not just you, and they're all amazing. So do something to stand out, you know?
Good advice, that, because face-to-face is so, like, I'm guessing you get a lot of emails saying, oh, I'd love to work with you. How can I get weddings with you?
Yeah, and it goes back to me what I was saying earlier. People just want to come to Ibiza and have a good time and have a laugh, and they think if they can just get it paid for, get the holiday paid for, then happy days. You know, when I was booking entertainment, happened all the time, and they'd rock up hanging with no voice, or they'd be missing and I'd have to replace them, or, you know, it happens. So
I bet you've got some wild stories of suppliers going
wild.
The best
stories are of me in my day, really, to be honest.
We'll get on to that at the end.
When I've worked abroad, it means for me, it's ultra professional all the time. I've never even had a drink, I don't think, but I've heard so many stories of people going out on the destination weddings and just getting wrecked for the whole weekend.
But the mistake is to you get there, you land by plane, it's warm weather, and all of a sudden you've got that holiday vibe and you feel like you're you're on a bit of a jelly. Yeah. And I think that's where people get a bit unstuck. But
yeah, they think, oh, we'll just go out for a bit, you know, but they're not thinking like, I mean, I sound really old saying this now, but I wouldn't have thought this 20 years ago, but you're dehydrated, it's hot, it's 40 degrees, you're necking wine because you're hot. You would never do that anywhere else in the world.
You do have to bear that in mind. It's important.
Yeah. So, you know, all kinds of people just want to come and have a good time. And even for local suppliers, for me, I'm so strict with my suppliers list, like unbelievably strict. So even when they're a local, if they're just emailing me, I'm like, yeah, whatever, you're just sending your stuff out. Or it's just got one sentence. Oh, hi, this is my new brochure for 2025. I'm like, great, good for you. I'll see you later. But
the advice is if they can get out, meet face to face, and like say, arrange shoots and just put themselves in front of you.
Yeah, I want to ask the question. So say somebody can't actually fly out to be to come and meet you. What would you say to anybody who still wants to get those type of weddings with a planner, with yourself, for instance? What else can they do if they can't get out there to come meet you face to face?
I mean, obviously, in this day and age now, you can arrange a video call. But the most important thing is you can talk the talk. But if you haven't got the social media and the website, I mean, it's a massive pet hate of mine if someone's got shit social media. I just can't get my head around not making it nice. Like, it's a free ad. So just post, you know. So if you haven't got the social media to back it up, then no one's even looking at you anyway, I feel. Or, you know, the credentials to back it up. So, yeah, putting yourself in front of them, maybe getting on a video call. Maybe, I mean, I've had people come over on holiday and they're like, I'm going to be on holiday. Can I meet you for an hour? I mean, that works. Everyone goes on holiday every year, right?
I remember you saying this years ago about driving to venues and just going to a venue you like for a coffee and just trying to scout out who's there.
Yeah.
And like you say, if you're going on holiday anyway and you're in an area, you know, plenty of people that would typically go to holiday in Spain, France, Ibiza, wherever.
Yeah,
not try and drop in there whilst you're on your holiday?
That's what I, like Adam said, I used to drive around to the venues. I mean, you know, when I went pro and my proper job, my old job had gone, I had all this free time. I used to get in the car and drive around to venues. Me and Sam would go for lunch and coffees and I'd meet people at the venues and just kind of put myself about a little bit. And it's, I suppose it's the same, isn't it? You're on holiday, why not give you a call? You want to get work with you? Shit, she's there. Let's go and have a meeting. Let's do it.
I did it myself. I did it here. I mean, you know, I didn't know the wedding venues, a lot of them, because I was hadn't gone that far yet into planning. And I did that. I went around all of them and harassed them. And, you know, I think you just have to put yourself in front of people. I mean, even more recently, there's a makeup artist and I've known her for years. She's not on my vendors list because I've got great ones and I don't need any more. And, you know, I'm obviously, again, very picky with suppliers because who's rocking up with a hangover, who's unreliable with admin, all of that stuff. I'm so strict with it. And it wasn't until she was like, oh, you're going to that party? I'll come and do your makeup for free. Once she'd done my makeup, I was like, oh my God, I look amazing. So it just made me take notice of her.
I'm not saying experience.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that you should always try and get freebies as a planner or a venue, but that really made me go, oh, she's really good. Actually, she deserves to be on the list. Everyone vouches for her. Everyone said she's amazing.
Being willing to do that and get yourself in front of them, of the right people.
You're never too good to be able to give something away, because once you get to a point, even when your business can be a little bit stagnant or something, you know, you're never too good to, someone was saying to me last week, oh, I've got no bookings this year. And I was like, well, if you're not getting booked, it's your own fault. First and foremost, you're not, you know, it's your fault. So what are you doing? Just because you've got this brand behind you doesn't mean you're too good to put yourself in front of the planners, take somebody for a coffee. Doesn't mean that you're too good to do that. You know, you've still got to keep doing it, I feel.
Well, I think you would pick your suppliers the same way a bride would pick their suppliers. They'd go on the social media, they'd have a look at the website, they'd probably get on a call, and a similar process, but yours is a completely professional. You've got to be 100% sure that whoever you're bringing in is absolutely bang on point. But I think the process is quite similar at the start. Do you like them? You know, what are they like on the phone? Do you trust them? Have they got good sort of social proof? Have they got good testimonials? Have they worked in certain circles? All them things we were talking about before. Similar-ish process, isn't it, I imagine?
Yeah, and also, you know, trying to get them on a shoot as well first, and same with the venue, shooting at the venue so that I can see how they cope with people coming in and out, see how they cope with the mess of the flowers so that we're, you know, obviously we clean up, but like see how they cope with that process of things happening.
Yeah.
You know, because that I have at the beginning, like seen it all and had some bad experiences. I had a makeup artist in the early days who just made the whole day was late because she wasn't quick enough with the hair and makeup. So straight away, I would never ever touch that girl again, you know. So you've got to be super super strict as a wedding planner. I feel I know wedding planners who don't really care, they're not really bothered, and they just, you know, just want to get the wedding up and running. But for me, it's like that all comes back on me and my name, as well as ruining the day, of course. So yeah, I'm strict with the suppliers. I'll recommend to the bride or the couple, you know, this is the list. I recommend that and that for you. You know, if you're happy for me to help you filter through, them, I will do. But, you know, I'll know a little bit about what they're interested in already, you know. And certainly no one's going on the list if they haven't got anything to show for it. You know, I've even helped people with their social media, because it's embarrassing for me saying this hairdresser, she's amazing, she's great. And the bride's like, well, I can't see that anywhere. So, you know, so it's then embarrassing for me. So I've even run people's social media for a few weeks just to get it going, you know, so that it, I don't look like an idiot recommending someone who isn't present.
Yeah.
It's a shop window, isn't it? It's a big, yeah. People do overlook it. Right. So your couples come to you. What's the process of helping them with the suppliers? Like, do you recommend certain ones, or do they come to you with, we've already found people in the UK we want to fly over? Like, how does all that work?
So in the consultation process, it's quite an extensive process. So they already know that if they're booking us, they're getting the best suppliers. They're not getting anyone who isn't the best. If they're not on my list, I say to them, look, it's usually for a very good reason. I'll be as honest as I can with you. I'm not going to slag someone off. But, you know, if they're not on the list, and they're not on my radar, probably not worth looking at.
This is locally, I presume.
Yeah, this is locally. Yeah. And then some of them may have said, oh, I found this person before they've come to me. So I'll say, okay, well, we can discuss that, because I am human and I might have made a mistake, and there might be someone who deserves to be on the list who isn't, for example. But as a whole, I know that people make fake social media accounts, buy followers and call themselves the Ibiza, whatever. Just like, oh, just let's just get a bit of work in Ibiza and it'll pay for O Beach that day. Let's just put an account out there. They ain't coming, they ain't turning up, you know. And then as far as it goes for suppliers from outside of Ibiza, Spanish residents, yeah, cool with them. I've got some suppliers like Barcelona, Mallorca, a few different places that we will allow to come in as well. They're used to the heat. It's a big one, you know. Some suppliers coming over from elsewhere, if they're not used to shooting in 40 degree heat, they're at the bar all the time, or they're sweating, or whatever they're doing, not coping with the heat, they're missing shots, or they're missing moments, or they're just not on it enough because they just didn't know what to expect. They don't know about the light. They don't, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to that. And then of course there's a lot of the legal stuff that's happened since Brexit, so it does make it a little bit more difficult now to bring people into work. So we've got to make sure that the ones that we have got are amazing.
Can we touch on that? Because do you get couples that have already found suppliers they like in the UK that kind of want to bring them? And you know, for anyone who is hoping to get work in Ibiza based in the UK, what does that look like now? Because I know you've said it's a lot lot more difficult than it used to be.
Yeah, it is difficult. It was a shame for us as well. It's not just the client. Like, when all this Brexit stuff happened, you know, we'd just gone through a really difficult few years as a, you know, in the world. And then they were like, there you go, there's Brexit, now you've lost all your staff. So we had staff as well, everywhere in Ibiza had staff who had their what you would say, like your national insurance number, like you could work, but yeah. weren't like a special resident, and they all had to leave the island and leave Spain. So we lost a lot of people. Like I lost a few of my girls because they were legally allowed to live here, but they hadn't made themselves an official resident. So then Brexit kicked them out. So it was a lot of stress for us as well. Like we're not being the big baddies. Like you can't bring anyone from the UK because da, da, da. Like it was a big deal. And then, you know, moving on to the actual legalities of it, they just love giving out fines here. They love fining you. They love turning up and giving you warnings. Like it's quite a big deal. Like you can get fined here for having the music too loud at a wedding and for being outside past 11 p.m. and all of these things that people don't know that we obviously deal with behind the scenes. So having people out here who don't have those permits and who are illegal, it's just not worth the risk. I mean, stationery and things like that, things that they're bringing out, of course, but physical people on the day, we just, yeah, it's quite a legal, bit of a legal gray area right now.
So for me or Howard, wanting to come and work on a wedding in Ibiza, could we do it? Or what would we need? Like, is the paperwork and visas and stuff?
Yeah, so right now, I mean, there is a loophole for artists, for performers. There is right now, they're working on stuff. So I know they're trying to build that bridge again that they've because they were like, no, Brits, get out. So they are working on that for sure. I think it's a little bit easier for a performer, but for anyone else, video, photo, you know, it's just a little bit more difficult. For us, we don't know of anything right now that can be done, but apparently there is something in the UK that you can kind of apply for. And you just have to make sure that you have that stuff on the day with you, because it's in Ibiza. If anything goes wrong on the day, any fines are given out, so whether that's a worker's permit or too loud music, which you'd never imagine that was a thing in Ibiza, but being fined for those things, it all goes to the planner, the person in charge. Yeah. So you can be whacked with like a 20K fine.
You're just talking solely about Ibiza as the island, aren't you?
Yeah, so I only know about here because I'm only here. So I only know about Ibiza and Spain in general. I know that there's parts of Spain that they aren't so strict on it.
Yeah, would you say mainland Spain is not as bad, or would it be the islands, say Mallorca, for instance, where it's difficult as well? Or
I think it is difficult all over Spain and the islands, but Ibiza has a reputation within Spain for being like they just love giving fines out. It's like a running joke, like they just love turning up and giving out fines. Wow. It's like the strictest place for it, and I guess it's because of all the drama that's happened here, you know, people jumping off balconies, people doing all kinds of stuff that you can, you know, the Brits abroad come in and like giving them bad reputation.
If you've got a multi-million pound client, they're like, don't worry, we'll pay the fine, happy days.
I mean, it's in my contract that if anything goes wrong like that, or if their music's too loud and the DJ won't listen, and it's all in the contract that they would be liable. Yeah, so
let's say hypothetically that a couple want to, like, they say they inquire with me or someone similar, and hypothetically I said, or someone similar said, I'll just come as a guest and don't tell anyone I'm working, I'll bring my stuff with me. Because that happens. I know that happens. Yeah. How feasible would that be?
It's happened. I mean, you know, hypothetically, the planners have let that happen. It all depends on the venue as well. Everyone's got to be on board with it. It's got to be something that's a super private, secure venue. You know, I mean, I had these rules in before Brexit, just for things like them not maybe not showing up, or them going out the night before or whatever anyway. So it kind of like backed me up when these laws came in, and I'm okay with it. But yeah, I mean, there are ways around it, and they are definitely looking into it right now. I mean, I wouldn't bother trying to look into it for just someone coming over and doing a bit of something that you could get here just as good. But if it was someone who's worth it, we could definitely like look into how we could make it work.
Yeah, so generally speaking, it's probably from a supplier point of view, it's probably not worth the risk, or it's not something that you would recommend to your couples.
It's just a bit of a just a bit of a ball ache, you know. it's just a lot of drama to try and do it. I mean, yeah, if it was
unless they're really set on a particular person, you'd be recommending them to just book through your supplier list.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we've got some amazing people here. So it's not like, you know, you go in. I know that some destinations have got like really bad suppliers and none of them are speaking English. And, you know, like you were saying before, how about the, you know, you would have to be a celebrant at one wedding because there was a language barrier. But it's not like we have that here, like that, you know, they all either fluent English or they are from somewhere that's an English speaking country. You know, they're all really high quality. So it's not like you can't. I mean, if there's something that you couldn't get here, then yeah, we would definitely talk about it. If it was a service or a product that was not available, then yeah, absolutely.
So, as a planner, regardless of whether they've come from abroad or locally, when you see a supplier turn up at one of your weddings, what things can they do that make you go, "Oh, I like that. I'd recommend them"? Or what are the things that kind of give you the ick and go, "I'd never want to work with them again"?
Do you mean if they were a first timer?
Yeah. So if you meet someone new who's been booked on a wedding, I mean, obviously where you're at now, you've already got your list of people and you probably work with.
Yeah. Well, it's just all the time. Just to add to that. So I did a wedding in Tuscany, and it was run by an Italian wedding planner from the UK, but living out there, pretty similar to you. And the bride and groom really wanted me to go out there and do it. So I did do. And from that wedding, she's recommended me for, God, probably 10 or 12 weddings since then. So I stuck out in her mind as somebody who was great at what I did. So Adam's asking, you know, what are the things that you'd look for and think, yeah, I'd recommend that they would go on my list.
And vice versa. What can someone do to really put you off?
Yeah.
I mean, the communication leading up to the day is going to be vital for me. If someone doesn't reply to my email, it literally makes me want to like strangle them. You know, if they're like, "Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, I missed this." You didn't miss it. You didn't want to reply to it. No one misses it. No one misses the WhatsApp, do they, or an email. They just didn't want to reply. So that for me is like massive communication. And we will have been in communication leading up to the day. But yeah, on the day, it's things like, you know, musicians and DJs having extra cables, just the small things, you know, and just not being a dick, just being nice to everyone. And, you know, it's not the you show, it's about the couple, it's not about you. So just making sure that you're not, you know, in everything and demanding and diva-ing and
it's amazing how that answer crops up all the time.
Don't be a dick.
Just it's dead simple, just don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. I mean, there's a lot of dicks about, there's a lot.
Loads.
I mean, that does also go into, if we dare touch on it, clients and their guests. You know, there's a lot of dicks in the guest list. You might have a lovely couple. You don't know what the client, you don't know what their guests are going to be like. I've had some awful, you know.
Get a bit excited. They've got a weekend in Ibiza to look forward to. They do get a bit excited, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the way they, yeah, I mean all the things they say to us, and you can just imagine. But yeah, I mean generally it's great, but there's also that we always say you can't predict what their guests are going to be like. You know, whatever they're doing, trashing something, getting too drunk, and that and class and money does not separate that. Like that doesn't mean that ones who were spending less on their wedding are more dicks than the ones who were spending more. Like that doesn't. No, there's no line there either. They can just be all as bad.
I can't wait to ask you one of our closing questions, which is the
story. Before we get onto that, I just want to end on specifically if there's anyone listening that is aspiring to be a planner, in particular, not just other suppliers, but you know, what advice would you give to someone that wanted to start planning in Ibiza as a
or I suppose anywhere, Mallorca, or,
a
destination wedding planner.
Yeah, I think again, it's about the shoots. I think you have to do stylized shoots. You can't just be posting things from Pinterest. Like you've got to go and do a shoot. And there's always people around you who will want to do a shoot. There's always an upcoming photographer who will want to do the pictures and practice. There'll always be a stationer who wants to try a new brand, a new line. You know, there'll always be people who want to shoot. So you've got to get out there and shoot, I feel, as well as putting yourself in front of people. And then, of course, you've got to start small with the smaller weddings and the smaller clients before you're building up. I don't think there's a right and wrong way to start your wedding planning business. I wasn't taught. I'd worked in events for years, and I found my own way by looking at what worked for me. You know, so I think that you just got to get out there and shoot, and you've just got to get out there and do it. You can do as many courses. I mean, you don't really use a lot of what you learn, you know, in the classroom. So you can do as many courses as you want, but you just need to get out there. You need to be a nice person. Again, like, don't be a dick, don't be a diva. Be nice to the people that you're going to be working with. Be nice to the venues. Be lovely with the suppliers. You know, get them all together and introduce yourself. It's networking, isn't it? Massively.
You've got to get your feet on the ground, haven't you? On these places.
I mean, the networking side of it's great, but certainly now with social media, shoots are visual and everything. Yeah. Everyone wants content. Reels, stories, yeah. Instagram.
You've got to get it in the
visual.
You've got to get it in the destination, though, haven't you? You've got to get your feet on the ground and go meet the people.
Yeah, if you want to be destination, you've got to, again, it comes back to, you've got to go there. And if you're in a position where you can't afford physically to get to somewhere right now, then that's not, you're not, it's not your time. You need to be building it where you are at home in order to have that pot to be able to go and travel, surely. Like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to go and plan a wedding in Tuscany and I can't afford to go there, but I'm going to plan a wedding there. Like,
totally. Yeah. What's the legalities then? Obviously, it's tight in Ibiza for working on a wedding. But say you just wanted to turn up and arrange a shoot, is that a different thing or?
Yeah, I mean, I still shoot with photographers and different people from outside of the island because people want the light, they want the golden hour, they want to connect with people. I mean, why would you not want to go and shoot? I mean, for me, doing shoots, it's all about the creativity, so I love doing it. You know, I know that there are photographers and stuff who are like, oh, I'm not going to give everyone free pictures, but I think it should be more about trying out a new lens or trying out a new look or trying out the blur or trying out the whatever. Like, yeah, let's do it, let's get creative, as long as you're not in edit season, of course. But you know, everyone needs to keep the creativity going. And how are you ever going to try out something new on a wedding day? You can't, can you? You can't try out a new look or a new or something or a new edit on a couple.
Yeah, it's a great time to experiment, like you say. But legally, is it allowed or is it a bit more lenient than it to do an actual wedding?
I'm sure there's a law somewhere that they'd love to give a fine out for because they just love. I mean, you know, I've had all kinds of stories with police coming to weddings as well back in the day, but yeah, you can do anything like that you want to do creatively. And there's fashion shoots here all the time as well. Like, a lot of big brands, major brands, do all their campaigns here. And of course, they're getting paid and paying tax in whatever country they're from. So yeah, it's fine to shoot here. And, you know, we love shoot. We've got like several shoots planned March and April with different photographers and stuff and here on Mallorca. And you can never have too much content and you can never have too many allies in the business you've got your back and who you can chat to and shoot away, I say.
Not all doing blame for us UK suppliers that want to go to Ibiza, it's doable.
Why not?
Should we do the ending ones because I want to hear some stories?
Yes.
Well, right. We always ask
for
just an example of your wildest craziest wedding story, but you might have a couple that you could.
So a crazy wedding story. I don't want to go on about it because I've mentioned another podcast, the one me and Andy did in Tuscany, where one of the guests asked Andy where the toilet was, and before he told her, she was doing it right by his feet behind his DJ console. So that's just one of the stories. Doesn't have to be like that, but you must have so many crazy, bonkers stories.
Crazy. I mean,
stand out.
Yeah. The having a wee and having a little vomit and having whatever in wherever you want to do it is just like it happens standard all the time. It does. It happens a lot. And then, of course, you know, you've got your behind the scenes stuff with us, which is like, you would never think of candles melting and disintegrating and flowers burning and having to get more flowers in quick before the wedding because they burn. And there's all the weather elements that we have to deal with. There's a few bits. There's one that stood out. The bride said to me, she had such a mumzilla, and this mum was such a pain in the ass, and she literally had me like, she ran circles around me for the entire plan, and she was a nightmare. She hated me. And she was she was on the couple 24/7, and they were like, oh, we just want to breathe, like, she's on us. And they wanted to consummate the marriage, shall we say, immediately after the ceremony, while she was still wearing a dress. It was of sex, some kind of fantasy, whatever, and they wanted to like disappear and go and have a quickie as quick as possible after the ceremony. But the mother had other plans. Like, she wanted to have this picture and this picture, and the it was like they were from a separate family. The mum was like really well to do from the Upper East Side of New York, actually, and the daughter was like wild, and she that yeah. So I had to distract the mother, who didn't care for me, in a, try and get her in a really deep conversation. And I was like timing the 20 minutes because they told me they'd only take 20 minutes. While they were like, I was like, are they done yet? Are they done?
Minutes? That's quite a long time. Impressive. Very impressive.
Quite a long time, yeah.
Dude, can you get my mum in a really deep 3-minute conversation? We'll be back in 2.5 minutes.
You need the extra 2 minutes for foreplay, though. So 5 minutes you need, yeah. I love that included foreplay, the 3 minutes.
I don't want to disclose that information. I love that they've planned, like,
they've planned
to the extent
it
that you knew about it. Like, they've pre-planned. After the ceremony, we're going to go and do this.
Check flowers, check music, check shag, check.
I mean, it was a big deal for them. It was like...
Was it written into the timeline? Like, consummation?
It was written into the timeline, distract mother at all costs. Yeah, like, wow. Because she wouldn't leave them alone, poor bastard.
You know what? Good on him. Why not?
Good on him, yeah. You're right, good on him. I mean,
I've got to ask the question, though. Were they religious and they couldn't have sex before marriage?
No.
Right.
No,
they're just horny really bastards.
They were just in the 20s, probably.
They're in our group, but they're just.
Oh my God!
Got the horn, and mum. I was picturing. I don't know if you've seen Mean Girls, but the mum that like barges in. She's like, "Can I get you anything? A drink? A condom?"
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I managed to distract the mum. She was constantly saying like, "Where are they? I need to go." And I was like, just trying to like.
And was mum? Did you get away with it? Mum was none the wiser.
They were. I mean, it was a little bit like. Comedy value, the entire wedding was a little bit off the ball, to be honest, but she literally came back like exactly how you just did, like, you know, dressing lipstick all over, like hair skewed, tiara, yeah, it was literally like that. And he was like, you know, like fixing himself. It was a little bit like a comedy show, but they were Americans and they're fabulous, aren't they? So it was like a scene from a comedy. Yeah,
brilliant.
That's excellent.
Okay,
that is gold. That, thanks Lauren. If you were not a wedding planner, what other role would you want to do in the wedding industry?
Well, I won't say music because I've done that, but I think I would be a photographer.
Photographer. Cool.
I get that.
I love photography. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We had a question from Russell, our last guest.
Our last guest, Russell, who's a videographer like me.
Is he the Scouser? Was he the Scouse guy?
No.
Okay.
That was Greg. Yeah,
it's Greg. Yeah,
we've had
Greg, a run of
videographers recently.
It's not fair. Why are there any singers on?
So Russell asked. He's a brilliant videographer based in Kent, by the way. Definitely check him out.
Russell Kent Nichols, a big deal. It's a big deal.
He, if you could take away a part of a wedding day and just get rid of it, which bit would you get rid of?
Speeches, 100%.
Speeches. That's what I
speeches. Oh my God.
Only because you've got a wedding coat, you've got to do one.
I can't stand them. I can't stand the roasting of the groom. It's so boring. No one thinks it's funny except for the person who's saying it. No one thinks you're funny when you're roasting the groom. No one. Like, you're just being a dick. No one thinks it's funny. You know, give a love, nice heart for you. Your best mate just got married. Say something nice, you know. I'm here for brides giving a speech. I had a bride this year who did the Snoop Dogg, you know, the famous Snoop Dogg speech. The I want to thank me for being me. And
yeah.
We played the track and she did that whole thing. That's cool. I love a bridesmaid speech. I love a rap. I love a song, but a boring speech. If you're reading, you look beautiful today. And this is the best day of my life. And I want to be with you forever. I get it.
I've heard the same speech that's from straight from Google about a million times, and it's.
I mean, you're supposed to be talking about your wife, right? So I'm talking about specifically now about like grooms or like father of, like, you don't mean it, do you? Because you're not you've written it. You've written yesterday, you look amazing. You didn't know she was going to look amazing yesterday, so you don't mean it.
It's a funny one, isn't it?
I think I'm for the you. Sake of the really good ones, I wouldn't take it away, because for five shit ones, there's one set of speeches that I love it.
I think we should caveat, like, yeah, general, like it's the long, the boring speeches, like you say, where people...
Maybe I should start vetting them.
The good ones are really good.
Oh, yeah. What would I get rid of? Oh, gosh.
The wedding planner.
Planner number one. Yeah, the videographer. Definitely don't need them. I don't civil ceremonies at venues, they're just a boring civil ceremony. But again, they could be good, but I don't know, actually. Because I think when everything is done right in its own respect, it's really good and it's valuable to the wedding. I.e., you know, I think the speeches can be, I think the ceremony can be if it's good. Yeah. But so I don't know. I'd take away bad timing and bad organization. That's what I'd take away.
I think a
properly timed wedding is brilliant. It always works. There's no lull points. Everything rolls on perfect, one thing to the next. So I would take away bad timing. And I'll tell you what I'd take away. Horrible people that run weddings at the venues.
we'll end there before we go.
No, I want to talk about it.
I could go on about that, oh my God, all day long about the rules and the restrictions and this is do this and the
But you know, it's the people though that try and enforce them, or the people. I think you can have a brilliant venue, but if you've got an idiot that runs it, it's so bad for their business. I mean, I've probably got three or four venues now that I won't work at because the people are just the fun police. And why anybody would get married with somebody like that running the wedding.
Anyway.
How long have you got? Stories on stories.
Can we have
stories on stories
to leave for our next guest, please?
So I'd like to know, let's ask them something about planner. So the worst or the most outrageous thing they've ever seen a planner do on a wedding day.
Or coordinator.
Or coordinator, because we do a lot of shit behind the scenes that we have to do. I mean, I've been climbing trees, pulling leaves down, trying to make confetti because the confetti didn't turn up, and you know, all kinds of things that you just kind of, you know, that the only planners can keep between themselves and like don't tell anyone about. But I'd love to know if the next guest has seen, can like, you know, tell us a little story about something they've seen, or you never guess what I saw this planner do one day.
I had one of the weddings at Bartle last time. It wasn't the coordinator, it was the person dressed in the room. They put these, you know, them wispy flowers. They're not flowers, but they're like wispy.
Pampas grass.
Yeah, grassy type flowers and a candle right in the center of it. Of course they're going to go up. It's the first thing that happened. I started lighting the candles. I'm like, why would you put that candle?
I've done it. I set a bride's bouquet on fire once. I set the bouquet on fire just by moving things around, and it was literally like in flames.
You know that
everyone saw it.
That little sandbite's going straight on Instagram. You know that, don't you? That's all we're going to put on.
It was her hair go on fire, didn't she? A photographer friend of ours, not long ago.
Funny, I've had a dress go on fire as well. Not a wedding dress, but a guest set her dress on fire last year as well.
Oh, wow.
In the middle of the wedding, at one of our weddings, yeah. So we were a little bit like, oh, maybe we should like reassess where we're placing our candles.
You live and learn. Live and learn, don't you?
Lauren, thanks so much.
Thanks for coming on. It's been great.
Great.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Yay!
So thanks so much for listening. We really hope that you found this episode insightful, inspirational, and if you did enjoy that, then please consider subscribing to us wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify. We're Think Wedding Business.
We're also on YouTube and Instagram, so if you want to watch us, you can go over to YouTube and find us at Think Wedding Business. And the same over on Instagram to keep up with all of our future episodes.
We'd really love you to subscribe and join us on this journey. And if you do like this content, please consider giving us a 5-star review. It just helps us get seen and helps spread the word.
So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.